This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:05 in the evening with Lynn and Ayman, and we're going to be spending the next couple of weeks looking back on the year that was with, I guess, a variety of lenses, right? Education, politics, business. But today we wanted to kick things off with a recap on Malaysia, what dominated the local headlines and how we may have participated in making international headlines as well in 2019.
So joining us for our 2019 review is Jahaba Sadiq, editor at the Malaysian Insight. Jahaba, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be back.
So if you have any questions, you can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet at BFM Radio.
Okay, so busy year. Lots of stuff happened. So I think we're going to try to tackle this as far as possible chronologically. We'll kick off in January.
Okay.
All right. So the 1st of Jan was when the ban on smoking in eateries officially came into effect. And throwing back, I remember a lot of heated public debates. There were a lot of memes. There were a lot of people suddenly bringing out their measuring tape to eateries and taking photos. It even resulted in a court case. Overall, then, how do you think the smoking ban went? How do you think Malaysians have been doing adhering to this?
I think a lot of people have followed it. I know a lot of pubs have actually implemented it, although they don't have to. And it's a great pleasure to go to places which are smoke-free now. People were making a lot of noise, and I think a few of the mama shops stopped selling cigarettes and their business suffered. But I think their business suffered more because of food delivery apps rather than people not smoking. And I think a lot of people now can smoke at home or anywhere else if they want to. But overall, it's good for health, right? I mean, I don't smoke, so...
And January also saw the launch of the Sayangi Sawitku campaign to help, you know, foster love and appreciation of our national commodity. So do you think this has done the job it was supposed to, you know, to get more Malaysians aware of palm oil and the role that it plays in our economy?
Yeah, in a way it has. But, you know, I think Sayangi Sawitku is so ancient because we've had palm oil for so long, right? I think the idea for the government is to promote palm oil outside Malaysia. Malaysians consume a lot of palm oil. And I understand from next year, we will have to have more palm oil in our diesel cars than before, which might not be good for the cars. But, you know, Sayangi Sawitku sounds to me like a standard three assignment kind of campaign. I did promise Tasha I wouldn't say this, but I'll say this. I told a cabinet minister, it felt like an MLM agent pushing detergents and vitamins to me. That's what it felt like, you know.
The general vibe?
Yeah, you know, I just think there should be more sophistication. And you want to promote palm oil outside Malaysia because I think everything we have and consume already has enough palm oil. And we're a small country, you know. I don't think we can take all the palm oil we grow.
So that's the thing, right? I mean, we're talking about sophistication and trying to get a message across to a wider audience. And that's partly because the conversation about palm oil was ongoing and it was an international one. I mean, we were involved, but really it was happening at an international level. How do you foresee the issue taking shape next year? Do you think that it's still going to be on, you know, the local level of Sayangi Sawitku and the EU going, you know what, we're not trucking with you?
Yeah, I think it seems that way because I don't see the ministry, the relevant ministry, doing anything better or planning anything better. I think they need better marketing internationally. And as long as it's going to Sayangi Sawitku, you're only appealing to Malaysians. You need an international campaign and one that we ourselves will say, hey, that's a great campaign. Globally, people are making noise about soybean because they're destroying the Amazon, the Brazilian forest too. But, you know, that's why we should point out that maybe perhaps our palm oil plantations are a lot better in terms of sustainability. But that argument doesn't seem to go anywhere internationally because we are lumped together with Indonesia. And unfortunately, most Malaysian companies have also invested in Indonesia. So either way, we need to have a better story to sell to people across the world rather than just us Malaysians.
And I'm just going back to the to earlier in the year, we saw this unprecedented move by the federal government on behalf of the Temia Orang Asli when they sued the Kelantan state government. What sort of message did this firm action from Pakatan send at that time?
I think a message to states which are not part of the coalition that they will go to court to enforce the rights of every Malaysian. Kelantan government has been quietly or obviously logging and replanting forests for plantations, including durian, and against the rights of orang asli. I mean, they have rights. They are Malaysians. They have rights to the land. I mean, they've been there for eons. And the federal government is just saying, hang on a minute, no, they're people of Malaysia. So if you're not going to take care of them, we, on their behalf, will have to take care of them, and we'll go to court to enforce this. We live in a federal system. Land, unfortunately, is under state. Mm-hmm. Land usage is under state government. So I think for the orang asli, their issue is because they hold no title to the land. I mean, they don't have to. Native customary rights, of course, right? So I think the federal government is doing something very good on that score. As to how it'll play out, I don't know. Let's see.
And while we're talking about land and plantations, I think we're seeing sort of an end outcome with palm oil where I think anyone who has driven along Malaysia's highways will see, the amount of land that palm oil uses up. And we're also seeing other plantations or other crops enter the space. Durian, you mentioned, and we want to keep up with that in order to supply not just Malaysia, but of course to export that. How do you see that playing out with the durian boom coming at a point where we are also seeing the after effects of it within our forests with other forms of plantations?
I think we are just jumping on the bandwagon at times. We just, China wants durian. So everyone's planting durian. Mm. And then they'll find out this is a fruit called manggis and or rambutan. And then we'll go into that cycle. I think we need a comprehensive strategic campaign that says we live in a fertile country, right? We can do a lot more in a sustainable way without cutting down our millions years old forest. And not just the tropical forest that we have, the mangrove swamps that we have. Because without having a balanced ecology, this country will be susceptible to rising tides, climate change. We all feel it in any which way we go. Around us, this used to be a jungle, but it's no longer a jungle. So I think we need a better plan. We can't just keep jumping on a bandwagon. Everybody does durian, and then everybody do this, and everybody do that. I think we need a long-term plan for this country, at least for the next 20, 30 years, to say, this is what we're good at. We can do exotic fruits or exotic vegetables, but we'll do it in a sustainable way. Yeah.
We are looking back today at the year that was, the year in review for Malaysia. What were the headlines that stood out for you? What are the issues that you want us to cover? What do you think affected this country this year? Call us and let us know, 7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. Our guest today is Jahaba Sadiq, editor at The Malaysian Insight. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
It is 6:15 in the evening, and you're with Lynn and Ayman on the Evening Edition, as well as in the studio with us, Jahaba Sadiq, editor at The Malaysian Insight. And we're looking through the year that was in terms of Malaysian headlines. And while we were going to take it chronologically, there have been a couple of messages about sort of, I guess, the biggest headline in the news today, which was the sworn statement from former police commando Azila Hadri, where he accused Najib Razak and his close associate Abdul Razak Baginda of ordering the killing of Altan Tuya Sharibu. And, you know, this is, I suppose, the not culmination, but the continuation of a story that's been going on for quite some time. How does this revelation sort of take things further? What do you think is going to be the next thing to look out for?
Wow, you know, it's the ghost of Altan Tuya is always haunting us, right?
Really?
And I think it just caps a bad year for Najib Razak. First time he's in court, in the dock for 1MDB SRC. And now this story is being revived that, you know, it's always been allegations that he was involved because Razak Baginda is his close friend, and Razak Baginda was involved with Altan Tuya, and now this sworn statement. I think it's just like, wow, it's the kind of a Christmas gift you didn't expect to get for newsmen, for us.
For listeners, too, that's the general vibe coming through the messages.
Like, you know, shocking, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know, because, you know, Dato' Sri Najib Razak has denied it, of course. And we'll see how this plays, because the case is at a federal court. He's appealing against his Azila's appealing against his death sentence. So I don't know. He's asking for a retrial. I don't know whether that'll happen. Cyril is still in Australia. And he has always denied that Najib did this.
Mm.
So all we have now is a sworn statement that says Azila met Dato Sri Najib, and this was said verbally. So we got he said, and he denied, and one dead person. So you make your conclusions. I don't think, personally, I don't think there'll ever be a retrial. I don't think so. But it just makes all those rumors about Dato Sri Najib come true, you know. But I don't know, because it hasn't dented his popularity, right? He still goes out, he's on Facebook. He's doing Dr. Mahathir Mohamad now. He's reversing it, right? He's finally going on Facebook and personally too. So it'd be interesting to see, I think. But, you know, it just seems like we are haunted by old stories and old people. It's very tiring.
It's a recurring cycle. Yeah.
It is, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And speaking of the former Prime Minister, right, we've also seen this whole year, one development has been, of course, the 1MDB and the SRC trials. What have been your observations and takeaways from, you know, what we've seen so far?
Ah, okay. So it's a very interesting trial. Our site has a podcast on it. And it just appears to me that the accused seems very detached from reality, that when he was Prime Minister, he didn't know what was going on. And now, if you were to read his defense, his 243-page defense, he still doesn't know what's going on, right? And it's like he's accused of this, but he's saying, look, it wasn't me. But you are the Prime Minister. You were this, you were that, right? So I think we got a dichotomy here that there is this very serious case against this man. Half of Malaysians think he's guilty already. Half of Malaysians don't think he's guilty. And I think this division will continue for a while. Meanwhile, he will go to court to clear his name. My fear is that there's no conclusion, at least for the next 3 to 4 years. And we will be served this Netflix-like drama for a while more. And if you call me next year, we'll probably be discussing this again. And nothing new. It's like, I know y'all are too young for this. There was a show a long time ago. It was called Have Gun Will Travel.
I was hoping that I could actually, you know, say, yes, I heard of it, but no,
nope.
I'm sorry.
So Have Gun Will Travel is this gunman by the name of Paladin. And in today's generation, our Paladin is the Mandalorian. So what I'm trying to say is the stories never change in TV land, in media, but in politics, the stories never change and the characters never change, which is kind of sad.
We are going to remember to cut this clip out so that when we do invite you next year, we will just play it once more. You know, you alluded to something earlier, which was our former Prime Minister and his social media game, right? And we've seen the birth of Bosku and, you know, just this enduring narrative surrounding it. What do you think is the appeal of Najib on social media? What is working?
I think it's a bit like when Dr. Mahathir Mohamad went on social media. It's we love the underdog, we love the Hang Jebat, right? And for a whole group of people out there who are now on social media or hooked on Facebook Live and all that, he represents the guy who was wrong, that he was the champion. He was cash is king. He is popular. He finally gets to speak to the ground and he's with the ground. You know, he can't ride a motorbike. You know that, right? He's always a pillion rider. But he's popular with them because he just goes around. I'm the guy who was your Prime Minister. I did all this. And this is the thanks I get by the people in the cities. So you notice that he goes to smaller towns and rural areas with social media, of course. So he is appealing to the mass of people who are finally, thanks to our wonderful internet coverage in Malaysia, data coverage, can finally get it, finally part of the game, finally get to troll. So he's the Johnny Come Lately, and he's getting that revival, you know. Maybe Boris Johnson's the same, I'm not too sure. But yeah, there you go.
Ooh, yeah, no, that feels right in a way that I don't enjoy.
Yeah.
We have a WhatsApp from a listener, Katrina, who asks, what about the white shoes, black shoes issue? Do you have any thoughts on that one?
Ah, okay. So I think it's very interesting. I don't have kids, thank God. So I don't have to think about shoes. I think the main issue people are angry about education isn't shoes or uniform. It's perhaps the syllabus and more than anything, the teaching. I think that's what people are concerned about. And 18 months into this new government, all we have is the form, the exterior, the shoes, the but not about the content of education. You know, the proliferation of international and private schools tell you people are concerned about their children's education. So they want the best. We went through a system where I think our parents were much more fortunate. Most of us went to national schools, and there wasn't a problem with the syllabus. We all speak pretty good English. We can count. Some of us passed ENMATS or tried to pass ENMATS. But today, you get a whole bunch of kids who I don't think it's the syllabus again, but I think it's the teaching. That somehow or other we feel that teachers do not have a vocation for teaching. I think that's what people are angry about. It's not white shoes and black shoes is just a symptom of the wider issue of our education system, you know.
Although I did want to pick up on something, which was that there has been this accusation throughout the year that education is a politicized matter, that every time, you know, the ministry makes a move or announces something, it gets picked up on, the media blows it out. Would you agree with that statement, that the media has played a role in, I suppose, the politicization of any issues surrounding education?
I you know, as journalists, we always pick out the most interesting thing.
Yeah.
It's not politicized in that sense. It's the most interesting thing. So when someone makes a long speech and the only interesting thing is he's switching the color of school shoes, what does that say? Right? I know they're doing a lot. I mean, I got friends who are in committees talking about education and all that. I just think they're missing the main point, which is the teachers don't seem interested in teaching. And kids go to school, come back, and they say they get more from the internet. Or maybe our expectations are higher because parents these days are exposed and they know, they think their kids should do more. We have a generation of parents who send their kids to school at the age of 3, all kinds of methods. So maybe it's that. I think that's a clash. Mm. I don't know what's the solution. I was a lot more fortunate. My parents just threw me to school. If I got cane, I got back and I got cane more. But today, I don't think any of us will allow that. And we just want to know the quality of teaching. What have you learned in school? And at this age, should you have learned more or a wider variety of stuff?
So we're going to be diving deeper into the issue of education in Malaysia this Wednesday. That's the 18th at 6 o'clock. So keep it here for that. And in the meantime, of course, do send your questions through for what were the main headlines that stood out for you this year in Malaysia? Again, that number to call is 7733-2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
So let me ask you about this other development throughout the year that has been capturing people's attention and perhaps derision to a certain extent, the flying car project.
Mm-hmm. Or the super drone.
The super drone.
Depending on,
whichever way you want to call it. So a prototype was revealed in March and it received with skepticism. The Entrepreneur Development Minister, Rizwan Yusof, has been continuing to champion it. I'm just wondering, why are we so adamant on developing this flying car? And in terms of like winning over public perception, how can the ministry and the car developers win over this public perception in the meantime?
I think the only one who's fighting or championing flying cars is the minister. You know, I get it. I was saying this when the government and parliament voted that every MP declare their assets. You know, they're putting up things which they didn't promise at their manifesto. They're scoring wins at things they didn't promise. But the things they promised, they haven't done anything. So do flying cars matter? No. I don't think this country needs flying cars. We might need ministers to fly away, but we don't need flying cars. What we need is better public transport if it is, lower toll charges, but not things like this. It's all too fancy for this country. We can't even get electric cars right. Right? We don't even have better anti-pollution measures, greener cars. Can we even get that right? Can we get public transport which is completely electric or running on hydrogen gas or whatever? Let's get the basics right. Flying car is just his way of getting attention. wrongly. You know, he's an entrepreneur minister. He should be encouraging entrepreneurs in so many other things, not a flying car. Because, you know, if it does happen, he should just take a ride on it and not come back.
So, I'm going to sidestep that, but say that, you know, to that mention of if it does happen, do you think it's something that we're going to continue to hear about in 2020? Because that first flight was postponed, which means that we still haven't actually seen this thing.
I think the first flight was postponed because the Civil Aviation Authority of Malaysia said, nope, it's under us, right? And I don't think they're going to allow flying cars around anywhere. We can keep talking about it. I mean, drones themselves are regulated, right? I don't see the point of it at all. Malaysians want a government that gets them prosperous, you know, not get them up in the air, you know. Let's just get some money so it trickles down so people can spend more, the economy will be better, people will be happier, you know. A ringgit has a fair value against anything else. It's a bit expensive now. I think that's what we want, but if we're going to keep talking about flying car, we are wasting our time. We're wasting our time on social media even talking about it. Actually, we're wasting time talking about it now. I guess that's why it's a big issue, right? No, I just think it probably will be an issue because he'll keep bringing it up, but I don't think we should waste our time on this matter. There are a lot more pressing issues in this country. Climate change, I think we're going to talk about the haze and all that. Quality of life in Malaysia. So, yeah, I think it's just distracting us and it's just getting people angry, right?
What were the headlines that stood out from you this year? What didn't make you angry or did make you angry? Let us know. You can call us at 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're spending this hour looking back at 2019 in Malaysian news. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:35 in the evening and you're with Lynn and Ayman on the Evening Edition, as well as live in the studio with us, Jabba Sadiq, editor at the Malaysian Insight, taking us through the headlines in Malaysia 2019. What has stood out for you? What would you like us to kind of talk about? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. So just as we had a question about white shoes, black shoes, and, you know, we kind of said, look forward to the education show. Similarly, we're having political questions come in. And while we are going to do a deep dive in that, I think this Thursday, in the meantime, Jabba, maybe you can take this one as well. Kim wants to know, when is the power transition flip-flop going to end? It makes people angry.
I think the flip-flop only ends when the flip has flopped, right? When the power transition actually happens. But, you know, I've always said this country is fixated on personalities becoming prime minister rather than political philosophy or policies, right? Would a new prime minister change policies or would he not? I mean, they're coming from the same coalition. It would be almost the same thing. So does it matter whether Dr. Mahathir remains prime minister to the end of the term or Anwar Ibrahim takes over now or when the country goes to election again and they actually win the election? I think we are fixated on the wrong things. You know, we keep saying, oh, you know, when are you going to transfer power? When are you going to transfer power? But it doesn't change anything. It doesn't put an extra ringgit in your pocket. What you want is to get this government, this Pakatan Harapan government, accountable for its manifesto promises that it will implement. Because whether Anwar Ibrahim takes over tomorrow or he takes over at the end of 2020, one thing is certain, whoever is going to run the campaign for the next general election will have to account for the 5 years or 4 years that they have run the government, right? So would Dr. Mahathir be a better guy for that? He may be, but he's 94. Would he want to do it?
Mm.
You know, Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim is 72 this year. He goes into the general election campaign probably at the age of 74, and he wasn't really in the last election campaign. People have changed in their desire for political changes in this country. Then you've got 18-year-olds coming to vote. So I think really the politicians should just get on with their job, as I said, of fulfilling their manifesto, rather than arguing whether so-and-so should be prime minister tomorrow. Because the reality is whoever's prime minister has a tough job to do. You know, the economy is still sour, to say the least. The ringgit hasn't reached 4 to the dollar. And you have a sort of a welfare system, which we've never had before. And now, today, they were talking about tax breaks for media companies as long as they don't sack employees. But the media business has changed too, right? So I think you just want, I want to just cool their heels and say, doesn't matter who's the prime minister, it's the government and their promises that matter. So all cabinet ministers should get on with their jobs of doing something for the betterment of the people of Malaysia instead of having fancies of
power.
Power and flying cars.
Mm.
Again.
Let's talk a bit about some environmental developments that happened this year. For example, earlier this year, there was the illegal dumping of toxic chemicals into Sungai Kim Kim in Pasir Gudang in Johor. At that time, 2,700 people got sick, including hundreds of students. So did the coverage of this incident lead to any tangible change? And do you think that the panic that ensued was warranted?
Yeah, I, you know, the fact that people are dumping all kinds of chemicals into our rivers is well worth the outrage. And to my mind, we've had people dumping things from inside the country to inside the country. We've got people sending their rubbish from all over the world to Malaysia. And what it tells you is nobody in the authority care. Nobody in power cares. Nobody in the ports care. Nobody in the local councils care because, you know, it's not happening in my patch, or and when it becomes a problem, I will take action because that will cost money. I'll get more budget to do it. So we've, I thought it was one of the most unneeded environmental disasters in our country, because if we had taken due care to regulate all these industries that use chemicals and they don't dump it, we'd be almost a first world country like most countries around the world, Japan, to a certain extent, even Singapore, they have rules and they enforce it. We somehow have a lot of rules and we selectively impose and enforce rules, right? So I think things like the environment, there should be no quarter given, that what happened not just endangered the kids there, but I think it tells you it could happen in any other part of Malaysia. And probably is, but it hasn't reached a stage where there was a chemical reaction that caused people to get sick. It's just something which, in this day and age, in the 21st century, this country shouldn't even have this anymore.
So the other thing, right, is that it felt to me that this year there was something of a focus on environmental news, but it came, it felt like, in pockets and waves. So when we had the chemical dumping in Sungai Kim Kim, everybody was outraged. When we found out that we had illegal plastic dumping sites, everybody was outraged. But I'm not sure that that level of outrage has sustained throughout the year. Do you think that we are growing in terms of awareness of climate change and environment, or is it still something that gets kind of pushed to the back burner whenever some new hot headline pops up?
I think you're right that the outrage happens because we react to it. We're not proactive in making sure it doesn't happen anymore in everywhere else, right? I mean, we're outraged when these things happen. And then, as you said, people quieten down to the next headline. I think we need sustained pressure to say, you know, to every local council, every state government that no can do. We pay our rates, local assessment rates. We pay our state tax, if any, our federal tax for those who pay taxes. That you can't allow this kind of things to happen anyway. And if people were to set up this kind of recycling factories or incinerators, all chemical factories, that they need to come up with an assessment plan and they need to inform the residents that this is happening in their neighbourhood. I mean, like what happened in Sungai Kim Kim was amazing, because I think that was actually a residential area and a school was nearby. And suddenly you had these illegal factories. I mean, these factories are illegal. And they were dumping things in the river. What it tells me is the local councils were not monitoring the rivers, or I don't know whether they have people to do it. The state government wasn't interested. And therefore, until people fell ill, they would have carried on with this forever.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
And another environmental crisis that we faced, of course, was the haze problem that happened a few months ago. And it felt really bad, like the most unbearable haze in like so many years. And there's been some new discoveries about who was involved in it, how people contributed to it. Do you think this year is a sort of turning point in terms of how we deal with haze, or is it going to continue to be an annual thing?
Okay. As first, I call it smoke because that's what it is. You can see it in Australia. It's happening now. I think the second thought you had is will be what we have. Every time it happens, we will make noise. I don't think we are serious in telling our companies that invest in Indonesia to make sure there's no more open burning, because they keep saying it's not happening in their area. It's happening in smallholder areas. It happens only when the winds go the wrong way and we get affected. You know, if it happens and the winds go the right way, we don't make noise about it, right? Because, hey, we only have two seasons in this country, hot and rainy. Now we have a third one, our annual haze. Come and visit it, you know, get smoked out. But I think we should just say, and this goes back to Sayangi Sawitku, right? Can we tell these companies, guys, there must be a better way of clearing land? And if there isn't, can you do some other kind of things which make more money than forcing us to buy more palm oil so that you are profitable? Right? What it tells you is, if you're planting palm oil, it's not profitable, and you have to spend money to tell us to consume palm oil, seems to be very silly, if not stupid, right?
So in what is becoming a theme for our chat today, which is recurring news and things that just never seem to end. We also saw Federal Territories Minister in April, Khalid Samad, announce that Putrajaya was going to set into motion plans to buy the enclave of Kampung Baru. At the time, at least, he was optimistic that he would get owners to unanimously sell their land. And of course, if we fast forward to today, even, you know, just last week, I think this is not happening, to put it simply. What do you make of how all this has turned out?
I was telling you earlier during the break that we first reported this in 1991. So, you know, some of you were born after 91, right? You, Ayman?
Just before.
So you wouldn't remember this anyway. So, you know, it's not going to ever happen. Any ideas of trying to get residents of Kampung Baru to back the government by saying, we'll improve your livelihood, you'll be proud that you're no longer seen as a slum, the guys in KLCC look down on you guys across the river, you're so underdeveloped or undeveloped. I think, you know, you got to keep Kampung Baru as it is. I like going there as it is. There's decent food, some beautiful houses. What's the need to develop every square inch of Kuala Lumpur? Right? We've already got flyovers over rivers, so you don't actually see the river. It becomes a drain. So, yeah, it'll still be an issue, I think, next year and the year after, until you reach a point that the value of the land, the perceived value of the land, is equal to the value of a square foot of land in KLCC. Then, by then, it's impossible to develop because it's so expensive. And we'll be wasting everybody's time thinking about what to do with Kampung Baru. Why don't you just leave it alone, make it clean, make it nice, and do food tours there? And make more money that way through tourism rather than putting another brick and mortar tower there.
And holding endless press conferences, yes. We're speaking today with Jahaba Sadiq, editor at the Malaysian Insight, looking through the Malaysian headlines of 2019. If there's anything that stood out for you, call us and let us know what it was. 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
It is coming along to 6:49 in the evening, and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Ayman, as well as Jahaba Sadiq, editor at the Malaysian Insight. And we're talking today about Malaysian headlines in 2019. So we've been asking people what they would like to, or what stood out for them. And we have Ibrahim on Twitter saying, we'd like to hear Jahaba's comments on the death of Iman and the extinction of the Sumatran rhino in Malaysia.
Okay, that's very sad. It's not just very sad. I think it's a testament to our inability to take care of our people and the animals that are in our country. And you know, it's not going to get any better. I think the pygmy elephants in Sabah are also under threat. They keep getting hacked. I don't know how many tigers we have left in the wild. There used to be a joke that the only tigers left will be on our national crest. So what else can I say? It's sad. It's so sad that we shouldn't be wasting time talking about it, but we should have some action plan. We will never have rhinoceros again in our country. We still have elephants. Each Malaysian should take an interest. Because when animals disappear, and our jungles disappear, as they are already, our quality of life will be affected. This thing in Europe now, right? They're very worried bees are disappearing.
Yes.
Mm. And, bees disappear, there's no pollination, the whole chain is there. I think we're already at that spot where we're not going to have a better quality of life. Why I say this, again, this is a long time ago. When you used to travel down the Plus Highway, down to Johor when it was first opened, 1998, anyone born after 1998? Okay. We used to have these bugs. I don't know whether you remember as kids, if your parents took you down the highway, they have these bugs, sticky bugs that you kill on your windshield. If you ever travel down the highway now, whether you're going to Penang or you're going down to Johor, there are no more bugs. Zero. Right? So it used to be so irritating because you'd be killing bugs and it's sticky and then you've got to wash off your windscreen. Now you're so happy. You can just... The only thing you kill on the highway is yourself. Right? But when this happens, it just tells you we're not going to get fireflies anymore and all that. And I don't waste my time talking about it. I think 2020 is the year we say we must take action, maybe get more tigers back in the wild, preserve the pygmy elephants, and let Iman be our little tombstone that says, this ends here, that we will not lose any more endangered animals in our country. But I don't think that's going to happen. You know, for a simple reason, when we talk about all these things and review the year, it's just everything that just outrages us, right? Nothing. I'm so sad to say I got nothing positive to say about 2019. You know, I don't know. Is there anything positive? I can't think.
Yeah, I think when we were thinking about it, we were working towards it. We were attempting, and then we realized we'd just be engineering. There hasn't been that much good news.
But maybe on a sort of like light note in a way, on another hand. This year also did see the end of an era when we saw two legendary athletes retire.
How light is that? Yeah. That's just so sad, right?
Compared to the extinction of a species.
Well, okay, I see. So yeah, but you know, you got a badminton player, mm-hmm. Lee Chong Wei and Nicole David, squash player. They both finished their long reign, right? Mm-hmm. And we're sad. Why? Because we've got no one replacing them, right? So what does that say? You know what it says? This is two individual sports, that we are better individual sports, and we are better because these people have their own motivation. They don't need the state. They don't need federal government. It's their own motivation that makes them succeed on a global level, international level, right? Mm. And so we need to find more of these people. Or we need to encourage parents to get their kids to do sports rather than just, you know, we got a minister that just wants to do e-gaming, you know. And it's a great thing, but that doesn't take care of people in urban areas. What about the latent Mokhtar Dahari? See, we still talk about Mokhtar Dahari. I can't name any striker after Mokhtar Dahari. One, I'm old. Two, no one exceptional like him. You know, but it says a lot, right? So we're not good at field sports, I think. We're pretty good, but not that good at team sports. But we're good at individual sports. So you said it was a lighter note. You're a Liverpool fan like me. I think, you know, not having a EPL has screwed us up a bit, you know?
I might have used the wrong words to express the question you
No, I think there's something great about this country is that these guys left as champions, and now they are inspiring us to find new champions. And I think that's good, and that should be the effort. Save animals, save the environment, get new sports champions out. Because sports is the only thing that unites us now.
Yeah.
You know, which is also very sad.
Okay, I do have a lighter note. I genuinely have one. Goglen on Twitter says, still got bugs, lah, especially in the early morning. So there you go. On the bright side, if nothing else, if you really do want a smudgy windscreen bug experience, you can still get that.
Okay, so just tell Goglen, if he follows me at 4 a.m. and we go to Penang for Nasi Kandar, I will prove to him there are no more bugs. Okay? And maybe there's two reasons for this. One, maybe there are no bugs going up north. Or two, we are so early, even the bugs are asleep.
Right? Fair enough. I tried. Nobody can say that in this moment I did not try. Okay, so we've just got a couple more minutes. And I think we just have to touch very, very briefly on one thing, which was, for me at least, I thought this year saw a worsening in terms of racial rhetoric. Maybe not necessarily on the ground entirely, but certainly in among the leaders of our country, which was unwelcome. Do you think that this is something... Do you think that this is something that we can properly address and turn around? Or does it signal the beginning of sort of this conversation really taking precedence?
I think this is a new normal that because we have all this freedom, we can talk about race and in very dismissive terms or derogatory terms against each other because we have freedom of speech. And I guess one, we have to be less sensitive about it and let the discussion go through. But I think it also tells you that people not sensitive, that we should be talking as Malaysians, that we haven't reached that Bangsa Malaysia of Vision 2020 yet.
Yeah.
And that's not a positive thing, right? But it just says, look, we got a bunch of ministers, politicians too, who ply their trade on outrage and racism, right? And we have to get rid of them. We need a generation of voters to say, you guys are no longer welcome here. We are a country of 32, 33 million Malaysians. Everyone's equal. It doesn't matter your color, your skin, or your faith, right? We shouldn't be talking about racial riots. And why it happens, not riots. Why it happens, I think, is because when we're not prosperous, we just want a piece of the shrinking pie. But if we are all making money, nobody ever talks about race. That's how it goes.
So one final question before we have to go to the news. We've got a couple of minutes left. What are you looking forward to in 2020?
One, I never thought I'd see 2020. Amazing that we still got 15 days. Mm-hmm. Never know, anything can happen. But I think it's exciting to see 2020 with Dr. Mahathir as your Prime Minister, right? You know why? Because he can finally see what he outlined either happening somewhat and the impact it has had on people. Are we still excited about this year? My question about 2020 is, when that happens, then what? When we have achieved developed nation status, then what? Because we still have to continue living to 2021, 2022. I'm excited that 2020 is happening for many reasons. One, Dr. Mahathir is our Prime Minister. Two, hopefully Liverpool lifts the cup.
Yep.
Three, that we all become mature enough, because this country would then be, 57 years as Malaysia. Yeah, you're 57 years old, you're already a pensioner, right? You're no longer a kid, no longer throwing tantrums and all that. As a nation state, what would we be? I hope that we'll be Malaysians. You know, and I think that'd be the milestone here to say, can we do this? And we don't need the government to force us to do this. We don't need a song, a national song, or that dress that was in the Miss Universe.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need a national food. I think we just need to celebrate our diversity, enjoy it. And maybe the birth of a new sporting champion, perhaps. I don't know. It could be, lawn bowls? Chess? Anything.
I think we'll take it, know? We'll take it. Lawn bowls, chess, why not?
Yeah, I mean, we already got champions in many things, actually, but we don't know. They're too shy, right? But I think it's going to be a great year for many reasons, because it's going to be 2020, you know?
On that note, Java, thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you back here around the same-ish time. Around the same-ish time in 2020. We'll see how the year has fared. You've just heard Java Sadiq, editor at the Malaysian Insight, taking a look back at Malaysia in 2019. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.